Welcome to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. We're so glad that you can join us. I'm one of the hosts, Ben.
And I'm Stephen. And we're really glad that you've joined us to listen to us muse about formation and what it means for who and how we can be in this world.
Welcome back to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. It's great to have you all listening for episode 3 this morning. We're going to have a bit of a fun chat around the Enneagram today. And this morning, you will hear me, Ben, and we'll also be joined by Stephen, Julia,
good morning,
and Tom. Which morning. Is going to be great. Yeah, so great to have you guys with us this morning. We're going to have a lot of fun discussing the Enneagram. And I thought we'd start by just throwing to you, Stephen. When we talk about the Enneagram or people see or hear it the first time. And there's a lot of questions about what it is, where did it come from? Because it's got some weird shapes and it's got some weird looking, you know, things going on with it. And it's kind of a whole lot of numbers. When you hear people who know the Enneagram talk to each other in numbers, it's a little bit confusing. So you just want to like give a little bit of background to any of our listeners who maybe don't know much about the Enneagram, who are new to it, or who are going to look it up later and be like, what the heck is this?
I remember I was in a men's group. I ran a men's group with a couple of blokes for about 15 years. And this fella joined it for a short time. He was with us for a couple of years. And I remember one time before we kind of kicked off, you know, someone said something and this fella said, oh, that's because he's a two. And everyone laughed. And I said, oh, do you know the Enneagram? He said, no, but I've just been watching you guys talk and I've kind of put together how to make jokes about the Enneagram, even though I don't know anything.
That's great.
Yeah, so he'd obviously, you know, listened to the banter enough to know enough about it. The way I describe the Enneagram to people is I often contrast it with Myers-Briggs. So yeah. Myers-Briggs tends to be a little bit more popular. So I say to people that Myers-Briggs is a measure of personality. So one of the scales in Myers-Briggs, for example, is introversion and extroversion. Are you on the introverted end of that scale or the extroverted, which describes, if you kind of think about questions, questions come in the form of who, what, where, when, and how. Mm-hmm. And Myers-Briggs tends to deal with the who, what, where, when, and how aspects and dynamics of personality. But then I describe the Enneagram as explaining the why. The way I try to simply describe the Enneagram is it helps us understand the question why we do or why we do not do the things that we do. And it tends to be a tool that can bring us to awareness in a way that, unlike any other sort of framework or lens that I've been able to find. I remember it's tricky because this is going to be a little bit of a meta conversation. I'm a one.
Yeah.
And ones tend to be quite critical in a dictionary sense, as in they critique pretty much all the time, but also in a populist sense, critical as negative. And often when I teach the Enneagram, because I do sort of teach it here and there, people kind of walk away going, geez, I didn't realize I was so terrible. And I'm like, oh, that's the occupational hazard of Enneagram from someone who, whereas if someone who, I actually learned the Enneagram from a seven. And she was like, oh, it's all, and like you walk away thinking, I can change the world. This is awesome. One of the people I was listening to, a tape, Ben, that's how old I am.
Yeah, wow.
About the Enneagram. And he was also a one. So he was kind of coming from a bit of a critical place. And the statement that he made that I found so helpful was he said that the Enneagram helps us understand just how delusional we are. And what he meant by that is, you know, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're thinking, oh, you know, this person is in need, I will help them. And you're helping that person and they're responding by saying, wow, you're being really helpful. And you're feeling a sense of kudos because, you know, here I am nobly helping the other person. Mm. And then someone who is not part of that potentially unhealthy dynamic then says, are you just doing that for you? Like, are you
yeah.
And of course your response is no, I'm not. But what if you actually are, you know, what if the things that we do are actually for alternative, unhealthy and selfish reasons? And the Enneagram I found is a tool that helps you get there so quickly. And it can be quite brutal as well, but it helps us understand the why we do what we do. So I actually think that Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram work really well together. Mm. It's a Latin phrase, Enneagram. So Ennea is eight and gram is side. So it's an eight-sided. So when you look at it, particularly in the context of the Christian faith, people can get a little bit unnerved by it. It's like, oh, it looks a little bit like a pentagram. You're like, no.
Yeah.
This thing's got three more sides, you know. and where does it come from? Well, it comes from a whole bunch of sources. Some cursory research will help you get there. But another way that I like to describe it is, and I always forget whether it's from Psalms or Proverbs, but you know, the seven deadly sins, is it Psalms or Proverbs? I can't remember.
I think it's in Proverbs. I think there's a section where he talks about the seven different things.
Mm. And by way of teaching the Enneagram, I say to people, well, what are the seven deadly sins? And one person might say, oh, sloth. and someone else says, vanity. I can't remember. Like, what are
lust.
They? Yeah. Yeah. And ironically, you played right into my trap there this morning, Ben, because when I ask people what the seven deadly sins are, the one they remember is the one that they are challenged most by. And for eights, lust is a big deal, but not as it's popularly defined. We almost exclusively associate lust with sexuality.
Yeah.
But for the eight, it's the lust for control, which is possibly... I would argue is by far more dangerous than sexual lust. It's a lust to control everything in your life. So when you read through the list, you might go, yeah, you know, sloth, whatever, you know, lust, whatever. I read vanity and I'm like, oh, hang on, that's starting to, oh, no, pride, sorry, pride. Oops, hang on,
yeah.
That's starting a little bit close to the bone. So there's a list of seven that, things that, you know, in Proverbs, God says, or, you know, the writer of Proverbs says God really hates. And most of those things on the list were like, you know, whatever. But there might be one or two that are particularly challenging for your type. And similarly, the Enneagram talks about these different ways in which we cope, in which we try to respond to the world around us. And whilst we might struggle with, you know, things like flattery and vanity and melancholy and stinginess, resentment, that's my gold medal event. So it's a system that helps. It's been used in spiritual direction, which, you know, Pete was talking about last week, and spiritual formation. It's a tool that's been used to help, again, you know, building on the work that Pete did last week, it helps us. It's like a set of we're doing this via Zoom. I'm taking my glasses off and I'm putting them back on. It's like a set of lenses. You put them on and you're like, I can see some things that I didn't see before. And you know, when we chatted about the Enneagram and potentially doing an episode on the Enneagram, I just wanted to, I don't think I need to remind you, but remember I said, I don't think we should do an episode.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You're against it. You're like, nah.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Because I think there's some really good resources out there that people can use to learn a little bit about the Enneagram. There's some great books. There's some great podcasts. But Brother Tom was pretty insistent that we do an episode on the Enneagram. And Tom, I don't know if you remember the story you told, but you kind of forcefully... disagreed and said, no, I think we should. And I thought you gave some pretty compelling reasons. So, mate, did you want to talk a little bit about why you thought it would be important to do an episode on the Enneagram this season?
Steve, I'd absolutely love to. I feel like I'm happy to make an argument for it. And I think it's very important that we do talk
well,
about
while it. While we're doing it.
This is the Enneagram episode, really. There's a few reasons I think that it's really important to do. One is that I feel like it's a reference for the podcast. Like whether you guys know it or not, it's something that you're bringing up all the time in a subtle way. Like it comes up and it's something that you refer back to. But in future episodes, it's like a foundation for what's going to happen in season two. I feel like it's definitely something that it would be important for your perspective of what the Enneagram is and how you understand its use for spiritual formation could be in order to kind of... I think it's really good to do an episode on it because then that way it can kind of be something that if in future episodes there's things that are touched on, this can always be something that is referred back to in order for the listener to be able to understand why the Enneagram is important for spiritual formation and why it's worth engaging with for them. So yeah, I think another thing as well that's really important to touch on it, like in terms of why it's important is, there's resources out there, but I really do feel like there's resources for what it is, but there's not a lot of resources for what to do with it. Let's find out what it is.
Well, do you want to tell us a bit of your story about how you experienced the Enneagram and then also how it's been a resource for you in your own formation? Do you want to do that for us, mate?
Happy to do that. To dig into my life here. I came out of year 12 ready to just tackle the world. And I was looking at all the options of which in I could engage and go about, traveling and getting out there and having a huge impact and just exploring like the multitude of ways in which we can just get out there and start life. I took an internship in my church, and it was actually compulsory that I took a some kind of form of study. And for Bible college, for me, I had to choose one that suited the internship with my church that I was doing. And I found myself somehow in this program called Next. And this is how I met you, Steve. And, I'll always look back on that experience that I had. And we did tackle the Enneagram. And I remember being so ready for life and for all the ways in which I felt like I was going to go about it. And finding myself in this class that, forced me to look at the Enneagram. And I was given 9 sheets of paper that had different ways of coping with life from what I understood. And I was told to highlight which of them that I related to. And I went through them all and I felt like I related to all of them. But maybe there's a line or two I highlighted for each, but there was one in particular that I highlighted more of than others. I remember coming back to class and kind of bringing these pieces of paper, and I had no idea what they were for or why they're important. And you, Steve, went through the 9 different types. And I remember listening to all of them being absolutely astounded at the ways in which there were people that I knew that just related to different types here and there. And I just felt like it was this whole new way of understanding people and myself and life in the way in which we cope with it and go about it. When we got to my type, I felt this overwhelming feeling of finally feeling understood. I remember that feeling. I remember coming home with it, bringing it to my family and kind of being like, this is me. This is it. This is how I do life. And I also felt this feeling of like, I don't think there's not a lot of types that kind of, feel great when they find out who it is in which, or the way in which that they, do life in terms of the Enneagram, but I think for a seven, you find your type and you go straight to the positives. For other types, you go straight to the negatives. But for us, we go straight to the positives and we feel this sense of this.
And you ask yourself the question, is there a negative section?
If there is, we wouldn't know about it. And then if there is later on, we find a way to justify it. But I think what growth has been is finding a way in which to engage with that and for that to lead to growth. So for myself, I remember finding myself in this Bible college course that I was doing because I had to, and kind of going about life in a way in which, yeah, I think I had to do it. But I almost ran from it in a way. Like, I was happy to take the positives from it and run with them, but the growth opportunity, I don't think that I really engaged with that super well in that year. But for me, what kind of happened was this environment was created for me in which I kind of had to face myself. It was almost like there was like a mirror held up to me and I had to see myself, the positives and the negatives. Like, sure, this is what is great about the way in which you cope with life and the way in which you live and the compulsions that you have. But this is the downside, and this is also the ways in which you cut yourself short. And these are the ways in which you hurt yourself. And I remember doing an assignment, Steve, that you got us to do, where we had to really analyze the ways in which we were cutting ourselves short. I honestly feel like if I never encountered the Enneagram and I never did this course with you guys in which we did spiritual formation, I think my life would have been completely different. I think that I have almost skipped years of which my compulsions would have led me to live in order to be like, sure, that's how I would have lived life. But because I know that that's how I would have done it, I don't have to do it that way.
Yeah.
So there's the argument to be made for the Enneagram for me is these are the ways in which you feel compelled to live life. And once you're aware of that, you don't have to live life that way. And that was profoundly impacting for me. And to be honest, like you said, Steve, there's so many resources out there, and that is true. And I agree with that for the Enneagram. But not a lot of them lead you on a journey. I don't think that there's many resources out there that present it the way in which that you have and the way in which Ben and I have both experienced through the way that you've presented it that make it a tool for the Christian life, a tool in which we can use for spiritual formation to kind of find a way to bypass how our default settings in order to live life the way that we feel that we actually should or that we'd actually like to. That's a little bit of my experience. I honestly feel like, and I tell people that if I hadn't done that class and if I hadn't encountered the Enneagram and if I hadn't had this encounter with spiritual formation, I'd probably be traveling the world right now and backpacking all over it, which would be a fantastic thing in some sense, but I think I wouldn't have been able to be so grounded and committed to the things in life that I am doing that I feel like actually have much more of an impact and depth to them than I probably would have typically found to do with my default settings and kind of taking the wheel for me.
I want to make a joke and say, if you didn't do that class and that course, you'd probably be locked in a dormitory in Portugal somewhere under lockdown. It was difficult for me to hear that, Tom, because, having set the assessments and then having read and marked your work, I was remembering a lot of your experience. So it was difficult in that it reminded me of a lot of the really challenging and beautiful things that happened for you in that period. You've kind of already started making some connections to the way in which you were introduced to the Enneagram and how it was related to formation, because that the subject was not the Enneagram. The subject was spiritual formation, and the Enneagram was an element. It was a component of that. You've already sort of talked a little bit about how it's informed your formation, but do you want to just maybe speak specifically again to, you know, maybe give us one or two examples of how it's informed your formation and invited you into, you know, particular, you know, formational moments?
Mm. This is why I'm excited for the journey of season two, because I think for the listener, this is the journey on which we will embark on. At first there's this experience of finding some truths about yourself and some awareness is available to us and accessible. But then what do we do with that? And I remember that is kind of where spiritual formation comes in. There's some practices and there's some challenges, I think, in that. What do we do with this? This isn't a justification for the way that I am. There is understanding for the way that I do life, but this is not where it stops.
Hmm.
So for me, I think that, sure, I did the course that year and I was able to vocalize how it all worked for me, how it all played out for me in my life and how the compulsions have affected me in a positive and a negative way, how I was destructive to myself. That was something that I could vocalize, but I don't think that that was something that I could face.
Hmm.
And it's taken years to kind of be able to be aware of those things and to start to realize why it is so important to move forward with them. Why it is so important to find other settings, find other tools for myself so that I can do life the way that it needs to be done, not the way that I've always done it.
Hmm.
So yeah, I honestly think for the listener, I'm really excited for the experience, which will be unique to every single person, in which people are able to engage with the practices that allow us to become mindful of the ways in which we live life, but the ways in which we could live it differently and be freed from how we've always done it.
Hmm. Julia, Ben, what did you guys hear when you heard Tom talking about his experience of the Enneagram?
Yeah, I mean, I love that, Tom, thank you for being so honest and I was having a good old laugh in the background, which people won't understand, but I'm a seven.
You sure were.
Well, so I was listening to this seven talking about I just wanted to travel and I was ready to take on the world. And then I thought he was going to say, and then someone wrecked it for me by introducing me to my type. And I, you know, have had a meltdown. And but no, it was lovely, Tom. And I just want to applaud you on I just want to applaud you on the fact that even if it was not exactly what you'd signed up to do, that how great is it to know something of that really early up in your journey? It's just such a wonderful insight. And yeah, I think it's really lovely to just hear that you've, I love that you took the positives too, went through all the positives. it probably won't. If anyone's listening and they're thinking, I don't even understand what the joke is, that's what you started with, Stephen, about joking about different types. Sevens like to be very positive and optimistic. So I'm just, again, having a bit of a chuckle to myself about the fact that that's where you went from the start, was to the positive list. Let's look through all the positives. Wow, I'm a great person. And let's just avoid the negatives. That's, you know, that's okay. We'll get to negatives later.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I think for me, Tom, just even hearing some of your stuff was, I think the thing that always comes back to me is that sense of just an increasing awareness of of the ways that you can live more intentionally. And Julia, I'd love to hear, because obviously you've mentioned that, you know, you and Tom are a little bit similar. And so I'd be interested to hear for you, Tom talked a little bit about some of the ways it's been an invitation to formation for him using the Enneagram, but how have you experienced it? Is your experience similar to Tom's? Is it a little bit different? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I only got introduced to it in my 30s. So I had at least, you know, a decade or so of being a seven.
Carnage.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of repentance and, you know, going back and making amends for all the ways you hurt yourself or others in the process. So I guess in some ways, like Tom turning up to the course or the class and then being introduced to it, I turned up to a retreat. So I think I was explaining in the introduction that I sort of have bordered on burnout a few times because I want to live in a very fast-paced gear, and I think I can do more than I can, and I burn the candles at both ends. Anyway, whole lot of confession in that, but I'd been in ministry and just experienced really burning myself out. And so actually reluctantly, I thought, you know, I probably should go to a retreat, like a contemplative retreat, which to a seven is almost like going to prison.
I wasn't going to laugh, but everyone else did, so I'm just doing it.
I mean, anytime you talk about silent retreat or slowing down or whatever else, I think, you know, any of the types that are prone to, you know, wanting to be in acceleration and go, 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 start rolling their eyes and thinking, oh, that just sounds like the worst possible thing you could do. So I went to that, and I guess that was my first introduction into talking really basically about the Enneagram. But I actually ended up doing a subject with Dr. Peter Bentley through Wellspring on the Enneagram, and that's probably more when I started really looking into my type, although interestingly, I thought I was a two, which will make no sense to anyone, but I initially thought I was the helper. Mm-hmm. And then I thought I was a nine, the peacemaker or the peaceful person. Mm. But I think that was more seasonal. It was what I was trying to actually sort of build into my life more, and then I landed on seven as being, no, that's definitely who I am. And I think, I mean, it, you know, it's got a lot of depth to it. So I think I just would like to give a caution to the Enneagram, to anyone who thinks they can just sort of do a test and then know your type and then merrily go along and think, oh yeah, I understand, you know, I've read for 5 minutes something and I understand my type. I would like to say that I think it's one of those things that you just need to keep exploring and mining down into, and that because there's so many dimensions to it, it's incredibly insightful. It's very challenging. I found it I mean, once I got past the positive list that Tom talked about and I started doing some spiritual direction was with a spiritual director doing some of the deadly sins or the shadow side of yourself, that was the most transformative part. But boy, trying to take a seven on a journey of confronting the side of you that you do not want to embrace is like, again, like, you know, leading them to somewhere that they're very fearful of going to. But that for me has been the most transformative side in terms of spiritual formation.
Mm. I probably shouldn't say this on air, but there is a story, Julia, I'll tell you after we end recording this morning, because I can't betray that person's confidence. But that very thing, remind me, I'll tell you a story after we record. For those who don't really know us, both Tom and Julia are type 7s. I'm a type 1. Ben, you're a type 8, so your story is different again. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came into contact with it and how it's played a role in your formation?
Sure. I mean, mine is similar to Tom's in terms of how I got introduced to it. I, at 19, decided to go and do a year down in Melbourne, living with my best mate and doing a program called Year in the Sun. And it was there that I was introduced to the Enneagram. And just like Julia, I also thought I was a 2, which if you dive into the Enneagram and you see what a 2 is like and then you see what an 8 is like, it's a little bit of a joke to think that I thought I was a 2. My hypothesis is that I think a lot of Christians tend to identify as a 2 or a 9 because they think that's the one that is most resemblance of Jesus. So we kind of just like presuppose that actually I should, if I'm not this person, at least look like I'm attempting to be. So I think that's what happened for me. But I really engaged with it probably a few years later. I was doing spiritual formation unit at ACOM, which was great. Forced spiritual formation, which was the only way I was going to do it. I know there's a bit of an ethics question about forcing people to do spiritual formation, but genuinely, it was the only way I was going to do it. And I had Stephen as my spiritual director, and we kind of really dived into the Enneagram. But at the same time, some people in my world, so like my brother, had done a year with Stephen and really dove into the Enneagram, and just a couple of other friends of mine in the context that I found myself in at the time were into it as well. And as I was doing some reading and reflecting on it, obviously became fully aware that I'm an 8, which means I'm, as Stephen said earlier, a constant desire for intensity through control or through the assertion of my will upon others and any situation that I find myself in. So that was
only people could see everyone's faces as you tell this.
I know.
Story. It's fantastic.
It's reading the 8-1, it was the opposite of Julia and Tom. I did not feel great about myself afterwards. I thought, oh my God, I am a dictator with some friends that I'm not even sure are really my friends, but just feel like they don't know how to say, Ben, we want you out of our life. But realizing
they call that a pastor.
Yeah, that's right. Oh man, it was just like, okay, this is very, very, very confronting. And for me, it actually, I started leading people and leading others, and I realized that so much of what I was doing in, you know, supposedly being for the betterment of others was ultimately for the betterment of myself and my situation. So one small example about when I realized that maybe I had a bit of a control issue was that I had my brother and another guy as an intern at the place that I was working, and we would often go out for lunch together, and I would dictate the time and the place that we would go for lunch. So I'd be like, all right, boys, let's go to Subway and let's go have lunch. And anyway, we started discussing it, and they started calling me out on the times that I was being too authoritative. So I'd be like, all right, boys, let's go get lunch. And they're like, no, Ben, this is you being in control again. You need to do something different. Wow. Like, okay, how about...
So Ben, did you give them permission to do that?
Yeah. Because right. I said, I want to know when am I being too dictative and when I'm just like imposing my will. Because I didn't always realize what I was doing or when I was doing it. And so I wanted to see it more. And so I asked them to make it aware, and they just used this small lunch example. So I was like, fine, well, how about I say, do you boys want to go and get lunch? And they were like, no, because again, you're dictating that we have to decide if we want to go and get lunch. And I was like, oh, okay. What should I say? And they were like, if you want to be as least authoritative as possible and give us as much say, you need to say, okay, boys, would you like to decide where we go for lunch and when we go for lunch? Or would you like me to decide when we go for lunch and where we go for lunch? Mm-hmm. And they were like, that is when you've actually abdicated the responsibility, because you've given it in such a way that we can decide whether we want you to be decisive, which is a strength of the eight. Like, put me in any situation where we need a decision, I'll make one and take it on. But at the same time, it gives us the opportunity to feel like we can advocate for our wants and our desires. And it was just a small example, but I was then able to see that in a whole variety of other ways. And even just little things of asking people to make me aware of when I seem to be coming on too strong. And I had a friend tell me one time that she thought I was angry at her because of how ferociously I was scrubbing the frying pan, just cleaning the dishes. She was like, man, yeah. Ben must be real mad because he is going all out on that fry pan. And what she didn't realize is I'm just sitting there going, do-do-do-do-do, cleaning the dishes, you know, like just relaxed. And I realized I would open doors really forcefully, just all these little things where I realized I'm going at life really intensely all the time. And now I'm aware that when I push that door open really forcefully, that's probably what I feel like just coming into another person's life. Like, wow. Just my presence walking in is big, and I got a thought, I've got an opinion. I've only just met you, but I've already got some thoughts about what you're doing with your life and how you could be doing it differently. You know, like I bring that intensity. And so for me, it's been a journey of learning how to bring that intensity when people ask for it and manage it when it's only going to be about like my what's going to benefit me and not necessarily benefit others, and even being more aware of how it can be harmful at times to others as well, in the sense of feeling steamrolled and all that sort of stuff. And it actually, having this awareness helped me find my wife, because one of my key things that I put down in what I was looking for a wife was someone who won't let me bulldoze them with my with my opinions and with what I want to do. And
be careful what you wish for.
Correct. I was about to say, and then I found my wonderful wife. And there's definitely times where I'm like, I wish she would just let me do what I want. But it's the best thing ever for me to have a woman as strong as her who won't let me just get away with, you know, with my crap, really, and just, you know, force her to do anything. So for me, it's been, the Enneagram's probably been one of my most helpful tools for my just trying to be more intentional about my formation. It's put a lot of words and frameworks and I guess awareness around how I operate and how I impact others. And it's helped me, I think, have the courage to invite others to speak into it as well.
Wow. Beautiful, guys, beautiful stories. I thought it might be fair. There's the one. It's going to be fair.
That's right.
To tell a quick story. I remember when I discovered the Enneagram, I remember I came home from a session at a seminar that I was part of. It was actually presented by a seven. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm pretty sure I'm a one. And ones have a bit of an inferiority complex. And I remember speaking to someone close to me at the time who they were familiar with the Enneagram. And they were a one as well. And they were probably not traveling so well.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, no, you're not a one, you're a five. And of course, because ones have an inferiority complex, it's like, oh, well, of course I'm wrong and they must be right. And so I actually tried to live for about a year as a five. I tried to, you know, read and research it. And there are a lot of similarities, but it did feel like having, you know, your shoes on the wrong feet. But I remember when I realized, yeah, I think I actually am a one. And I started doing some research. I discovered that ones tend to be suckers for causes. Any kind of cause bigger than themselves, they often get drawn into justice kind of work. And I remember as part of my research realizing, yeah, it might be hard for people around me feeling like they are props in my quest to right some great injustice in the world. And I remember this was very early on. I remember thinking there was one fella in particular, my partner Lisa, she was the youth pastor of a small suburban youth group that kind of became quite large, you know, comparatively speaking for our geographical region. And I was relating to this one young fella, and I kind of felt I need to go back and just have a chat with him and apologize and say, look, you know, if you felt like a prop, and hand on heart, right? I honestly thought, you know how you imagine these things. Oh, yep, I've done the wrong thing. I'm going to go and apologize and they're going to be really grateful that I apologized and it's going to be great. And I remember we were sitting in a car, in a car park, just before there was some kind of thing going on in the church building, and we're sitting in the car park. And I remember I said to this guy, I said, look, I just want to let you know that I've got a sneaking suspicion that I may have treated you in this way. And you may have felt like I have used you. And probably for the next 10 minutes, he told me exactly what it was like being, you know, and it didn't go the way I thought. It was effectively him saying, yep, you really hurt me, and this is how.
Yeah, wow.
And he went into great detail explaining how he felt like a thing, you know, that Stephen used in order to do something that was more important. And that that has been burned into my psyche, you know, that people can feel as though they're just objects that I use in my quest to right some wrong in the world. So, it can be uncomfortable. And you've said a couple of things, Ben. I just want to highlight them because I think they really highlight not just this particular episode, but what we're hoping to do in this podcast. Mm. He said, quote, I didn't realize what I was doing and when I was doing it. And I think that's a classic, that's something that the Enneagram classically can help us see, mm, what we are actually doing and when we are doing it. So then when you have that moment, and each of you have recounted your own experience, you know, your equivalent of sitting in a car and apologizing to somebody and them feeding back to you exactly what you do and how often you do it and how people feel as a consequence. And you're like, oh,
yeah.
And then the other thing that you said, Ben, that I thought was particularly relevant for this episode and this season was you talked about the lunch example. Mm. And you said it's just a small example. And in season one, when we talked about disciplines, this is where disciplines can become really helpful. We create these crises that there's not as much riding on it, you know, like lunch.
Yeah.
There's really not a whole lot riding on lunch, but we create these small opportunities to be crises that draw our attention, that help us, again, you know, relating back to what Pete said last week, helping us see the influences without and within so that we can become sensitized to the times when we are doing those things without realizing them, but the stakes are actually a lot higher. And that's, I can't remember whether we mentioned this in season one, Ben, but this is where we actually got the name, the subtle reformation. Mm. It's actually in the little things, or the things that seem to be small. So you're deciding when and where people are going to be having lunch and the way it makes those people feel. And doing that again, you know, for others in our lives, subject to our, you know, as Tom was talking about earlier, our compulsions, it's a death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
So the subtle reformation is about hopefully being able to see all of these little things that pile up and create significant pain for others and not just ourselves. You guys are crackers.
No, that's good.
So in terms of, I just want to make a couple of comments to talk about where to from here. But before I do, if you guys can, like, if you were going to give advice to anyone about where to start and what to do with the Enneagram, what's one or two things you might say to people in terms of getting going? I'm thinking we'll go in this order. I'll pick on you, Ben, because you've probably had a lot longer to think about this, and then maybe Julia and Tom. So if people were saying, well, where do I start? You know, how do I get going? What do you reckon? What advice would you give, Ben?
I think a couple of things to get going into it is, number one, I think what Tom said about how he figured out the Enneagram is the best way to do it. I've seen a whole bunch of people do the tests, but so often what happens is we answer the questions based on who we would like to be rather than accurately on who we are. Whereas reading the descriptions of the different, you know, types or bents that we have and highlighting which ones really seem to resonate with you really draws out it a little bit more clearly, because it's not so much, if in this situation, what would I ideally like to do? It's more what's actually speaking to me. So I think that's something that's really helpful to do in terms of figuring it out. And then I also think trying to read a little bit about your type and other types. I think too often when we do personality things, we become obsessed with ourselves and trying to understand who we are. But I actually think one of the biggest gifts for me has been reading up about all of the other types and helping me understand who they are. So, you know, understanding that my wife is a two and what that looks like for me to really love her and understand her and support her is really important. So while it's important for you to understand yourself, don't become so self-obsessed that you're an expert on yourself and you're a complete novice at everyone else. I think that's just basic 101 when it comes to these sort of things. I think that'll be really helpful for you. And my last encouragement is don't put everyone in a box once you've figured this out. I think it might have been you who said it, Stephen. The Enneagram is not a box that we put ourselves in, but it's a box that we learn how to get out of. Because we put ourselves in these boxes and then we become aware and we go, oh, actually, I can choose to step out of this. So don't do that to someone else. Don't put them in a box and be like, oh, you don't know this, but you're a seven and you're doing all these seven things. So well done on being a seven. And then that's it. Like, don't put people in boxes. You don't actually know what drives them deep down in who they are. Don't put people in boxes.
And as Samuel L. Jackson says in The Long Kiss Goodnight, he says, don't make assumptions because you make an ass out of you. Assumption.
But yeah, that would be my just quick little encouragements for people if they're starting
That's great, Ben. You've actually checked off all the things on my list, so well done.
Oh, great. Yes.
Julie, how about you, mate? Getting going.
So I think the as I said before, it's something that you need to take time to really, you know, digest and consider and understand, because it is about self-awareness. Because, you know, some of the most dangerous people in teams or just in the world are unaware of self. Like when you have no understanding of how you operate, what you do, what your drivers are, then that's really dangerous. So definitely for self, but I agree with Ben. I think it also is about because it's an invitation by God, so it's not just a psychological tool. And that's where, again, I think, you know, people can, because it's become more popular, it's, you know, I think people have looked at it as a bit of positive psychology, but really it's an invitation from God to see yourself as a gift to the world and what you bring when you're healthy, when you're flourishing and fully alive as yourself. And that everyone else is the same. So, you know, that every type, every person that we're working with in teams or in family, or I think that they are gift as well. But that's been really helpful for me to understand, particularly, you know, family and teams I was working with, to try and really draw out the best of people, like to have some sort of understanding from compassion as well. That I just feel like, Ben, I want to say back to you, which is probably a seven thing, because we always like to go positive. I love eights. I've got quite a lot of eights in my life, and I feel
God bless you, Julia.
When they're healthy, I feel really safe around them. Like I know that there's protection, that there's a sense of wanting to draw out the best in people, like really, you know, almost provoking you. Come on, there's more to you. There's more you could be and do. I really love eights. And I'm just trying to think what the last bits. That's the other thing. Get a coach or a spiritual director if you're able to, or get someone to sponsor you to do it, and work through some of these things with someone who's very safe, and you can go through the process of addressing your shadow side, or the side of you that we would like to deny and say, no, I don't do that. I don't behave like that. And I've found that really beneficial, that I needed to work it through with someone else. I probably wasn't in a healthy place to be able to let other people speak back to me about what I was doing. I felt a little bit like Stephen, like I was confronted by people throwing it at me, probably in moments where they were frustrated. Whereas when I then got together with a spiritual director, it was a chance to actually go, okay, we are going to confront this, or I'm going to confront this, and I want to understand it, but I need to feel safe around you to be able to do that, because taking off the mask that has been the lovely persona that you've had for so long is quite confronting too, and kind of getting behind that. So I'd highly recommend going through it with someone who understands the Enneagram and can really help you to come to terms with yourself.
That was really, that last bit was really painful for me to listen to, Julia. My spiritual director didn't know about the Enneagram. So in between sessions, I would send them articles and book, like, this is how I want you to spiritually, do you get the irony?
Yeah.
I'm fixing him as a spiritual director. And then years later, I'm like, oh my God, what did I just do? Oh my God. So it was very painful for me to hear you say, you know, find someone who can, you know, who can help you on your
own. Yeah, and ditch the one that does it.
And if not, fix them. Tom, what advice or resources do you have for people getting going?
I feel like the Enneagram is definitely a life-changing tool, a life-changing map in a sense. I think people do resist sometimes with this notion of, you know, don't put me in a box. This isn't the way that I am. I'm every way of being. But I love how I've been reading this book that Christopher L. Hewitt has written. I don't know if you've heard of it, called The Sacred Enneagram.
And I've not read it, but I've heard a number of people talk about how good it is, mate. Keep going.
Yeah. He's a one and he's a monk, of course. He's a, and nothing more fitting. I love how the terms he uses. One is, there are nine paths back to yourself. And I think it's a really healthy way of framing it. They're not boxes that we're stuck in. There's paths back to ourselves. That's a really special thing, because I think that's what it's for. It's for growth. It's for awareness. It's for seeing how you do it, but being able to be free of that and have other ways as well. In my own community, I've unfortunately seen the misuse of the Enneagram, and that's been really disheartening for me, because I think it is such a life-changing, incredible tool. But what people might do with it, or might feel tempted to do with it, and I felt this temptation myself, is to change other people's lives using this tool. So I want to speak to the listener on that. That may be a temptation, but I think whilst going through every type, there's names of people that we love and that we are close to, family members, friends, that we could put names to each type. That doesn't mean we need to go to them and tell them how they are, who they are, come to them with the answers. I feel like what I've learned, a healthy way of kind of relating the Enneagram to people, is coming to them with questions. seeking to understand people, and maybe you get to the bottom of things, you know, when they, like when you bring questions that help draw out some of those things, and it gives them the opportunity to kind of control the conversation. It gives them the opportunity to kind of really feel free to express and engage with it themselves. I think that there's nothing I've seen more harmful than people making assumptions about another person and telling them, this is who you are, this is how I see you, and that is the way that it is, and this is how you need to change. So yeah, I really do feel like putting the power of the Enneagram in someone else's hands for themselves, the really good way of doing that is coming to them with, I want to understand you and I love you. And so here are questions that I can ask that might lead me to understand you better. It's a completely different mindset to temptations that we can have with this really incredible tool.
Because let's do a quick poll. Hands up, who loves a conversation that begins with the sentence, do you know what your problem is? Yeah. Now, I'm just going to summarize. You guys have covered everything that I had on my list. You know, so point number one, it's not a party game. Don't type other people. No one loves being the outsider in a conversation. Oh, that's just Tom being a seven. What are you guys talking about? Oh, like no one loves that game. So just don't do it. Number two has three dot points. Number two, don't do the test. We've talked about that already. Like don't do a test. The Enneagram is not something that you're told. It's not something that is ascribed to you. It's something that you have to discover for yourself, and consequently takes time. So no shortcuts. You just got to take the time to do it. And then in terms of practical stuff, I do want to highlight the dimension that people like Julia and Tom bring to this is it's not all about shadow. There's light here as well. And the rest of us who are not sevens can forget that. So it's not just this is how terrible you are, but imagine if you were aware, and imagine if you actually were choosing rather than, you know, like an addict just compulsively acting in a particular way. What if you consciously chose to act in a particular way? So there's light as well as gift. A website that I found incredibly helpful is the Enneagram Institute. I forget whether it's .com or .org. That's probably the website that I use the most. We'll put all of these links into the show notes. There's an app that I use regularly as well. I often, you know, if I'm meeting people, whether I'm just meeting with somebody for something, if I'm coaching people, if I'm mentoring people, I'll spend a little bit of time with the app before I meet with them, just so I can get a bit of an idea of how can I have an interaction that is going to create invitations for this person rather than boxing them in. It might be good, Ben, if after the show, maybe the next day or two before we upload this episode, if we just kind of send you maybe one or two of our favorite podcasts or books. Yeah. And by all means, yeah, listeners, if you have any resources that you found really helpful, if you could do two things. One, if you could send us the resource, and if you could also let us know your type as well, because different types prefer different resources. So
yeah.
I've found that that stuff helpful. And it is something that we want to use later on in season two when we actually invite everyone to into some practices. One of the practices will be looking for patterns, and we will use the Enneagram as the framework to look for and to see patterns.
Yeah. That's good.
I think that's it from me, Ben.
Great. That's awesome. Well, I think that's it for us too. So Stephen, Julia, Tom, it's been great having you guys on this morning. And for all those listening, we hope this has been a really helpful introduction into the Enneagram and hopefully something that if you haven't dived into, you feel encouraged and capable of. And maybe if you have, there was some insight and some thoughts around it that will be helpful. But as Tom said, we hope that this will be a good just foundational episode that people will be able to come back to from time to time as we talk about it and use it as a bit of a framework for engaging in personal formation. It's a little bit more tailored to each of us as individuals and how we're wired. So thanks guys for being on today. Thanks for all you shared and your vulnerability and all of that. I know that's always a little bit tricky, but it's always really life-giving as well. So thanks for that. And thank you for our listeners. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you again next week. So see you all later.